Ozarks Today.
News Talk KRMS.
And welcome in on another beautiful afternoon at Lake of the Ozarks. I want to take a moment to send a special thank you out to Raul Chacon Jr. taking time to speak with us today from Miami, Florida. I know he's had conferences the last couple of days and was very busy. Raul Chacon works with MG&M, their Miami office. That's Manning, Gross, and Massenburg. Has extensive experience in trying maritime law in both state and federal courts, not only across the continental United States, but in Hawaii, the Caribbean, Canada as well. He is one of the foremost experts in maritime law, so I want to thank him for taking time out to shed some information on that. Let's go to our very first segment of the day. We're going to start the program today by talking about a story we told you about the other day following up on the duck boat tragedy from Branson and Table Rock Lake, and a new filing by attorneys for the people who own the boats in the duck boat, the system down there, Ripley Entertainment, as well as the duck boat company themselves. They have filed based on a law that was passed in 1851 that they say limits their liability, and we're going to get a little more expertise on it. Joining us on the program now is Raul Chacon Jr. He is an expert in maritime law. Mr. Chacon, thanks for taking time to join us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
In this filing, this is a law that was based back in 1851. My very, very basic understanding of it is that it was something that was passed to kind of encourage people to get into the shipping business via the waterways. What can you tell us about the law and the filing? They say this is pretty common in maritime accidents. Is that the case?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely common. The Limitation of Liability Act, which we affectionately call LOLA, provides a ship owner with an opportunity that is unique in maritime law. The ship owner pursuant to the act can petition the United States District Court and request that he or she be exonerated from liability, or in the alternative, that the ship owner's liability be limited to the value of the vessel post-loss or casualty plus any pending freight. The limitation will fail if the loss occurs due to the vessel owner's privity with or knowledge of the incident, or the particulars that actually caused the loss. In other words, limitation fails if the acts which caused the loss were known to the owner. The concept of limitation originated in the Middle Ages and has been popular, or became popular, in the 16th and 17th centuries, when maritime commerce began to flourish. The purpose of the act here in the United States when it was enacted in 1851 was, as you say, to promote American shipbuilding, commerce, and investment in the merchant marine industry in order to place the U.S. shipping on equal footing with other countries already benefiting from their own versions of the act. So it's been something that's been around for a while. It has been criticized over the years as neither warranted or consistent with current reality. However, it is still good law, and even the events of what, if you recall, the Deepwater Horizon, where the act was challenged again, have not sunk the act, no pun intended.
So when you say that the liability can be dependent upon the knowledge of the events that caused the incident, could one make the argument that since they had advanced knowledge that there was going to be potentially dangerous storms on the water that day at Table Rock Lake and made the decision to take to the water, that could be a mitigating circumstance?
Well, it definitely will go to the knowledge of, or arguably the knowledge of the owner. If the claimants in this case, and the reason you have the act really is so you can join all potential claimants in one venue, and that's before the federal district court here. But if the claimants can demonstrate to the court that the owner had knowledge of whatever factor eventually led to the sinking itself and the loss of life, then yes, absolutely, the limitation can fail.
When you're pursuing something like this in a case where obviously the boat is sunk, the company says, well, that has no value, there was no freight on board, the only loss is human life, then it seems like the question comes down to individually calculating the value of each one of those 17 lives that were lost that day, and that's something that obviously is going to be difficult for the courts to do, but it's not something that is uncommon.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what the court will have to do. First, the court would—it's a two-part process. So, First, the court will determine whether the owner should be exonerated from all liability. If the court finds that the owner has no liability, then the case ends there. But if the court then determines that there is liability, then the court goes to the second part of that and determines whether, like I mentioned before, whether the owner had any knowledge of the cause that eventually caused the loss. If the court finds that the owner had no knowledge, then it ends there. Then the court has to determine the value of each one of those claims, and based on the amount of the limitation fund, and divide it equitably.
So since this is done as a measure to kind of enjoin those cases, as you said, and the attorneys for Ripley Entertainment say the same thing, that this is done really to expedite the process, does this prevent individual filings of civil suits in the future and instead hold all these cases at once, or does this only apply to criminal law, or how does that work?
No. This is strictly on the civil front, and what it does, as you say, yes, it does prevent. The court actually issues an injunction preventing the filing of any suits outside of this limitation proceeding. The downside to that for the claimants is that they're not entitled to a jury trial. So this is going to be in front of a judge. The judge can, have an advisory jury sit and take advisory, verdict from that and weigh that in his ultimate decision. Case, but yeah, everything will be before this one court, and all other cases should be enjoined. But an interesting twist to this whole thing is where the incident occurred. From my understanding, it is a landlocked lake, and I believe the Eighth Circuit has already considered the issue in the past whether Table Rock is a navigable waterway. And I believe the Eighth Circuit has determined in the past that it is not a navigable waterway, so therefore general maritime law does not apply. There is no admiralty jurisdiction, and the limitation action should fail accordingly. There's probably conflicting cases out there that probably will make this an interesting argument for the court, but that's something that will have to be addressed by the court at the appropriate time.
Sure, and that can be very interesting. I don't know the history of Table Rock Lake quite as much as I do here at Lake of the Ozarks, where I'm located. But, for instance, Lake of the Ozarks is also, enclosed by two dams. But since it was originally created from damming up a navigable river, Congress still considers the Lake of the Ozarks a navigable waterway and will take an act of Congress to change that. I don't know if Table Rock Lake was created in the same manner or method as Lake of the Ozarks, but that certainly would be an interesting argument. Now, Ripley Entertainment has also said, basically they're saying this doesn't seem as callous as it is. We're not trying to deny all liability because they're currently in the process of trying to negotiate and trying to settle these cases and to mediate these cases. How does mediation and settlements become affected if the court enjoins the cases here?
Well, the court will, obviously, all the claims will be made before this court, and this court will most likely order a mediation or a settlement conference to occur. And then at that point, it will bring all the parties together to try to resolve the matter, regardless of whether the court's actually issued an injunction to prevent any other lawsuits. They could still negotiate all their settlements here, and if settlements are reached, then the case is eventually dismissed. And that's the end of it.
In your opinion, and obviously you're not trying this case, I understand that, but what are the odds, and how often does it happen where something like this actually prevents families from victims of tragedies like this from getting any money at all? Is that likely to happen, in your opinion?
That's difficult to say. I know courts, although they'll follow the dictates of the law, where there are tragedies as this, tend to not favor applying the Limitation of Liability Act. But, 9 times out of 10, I would venture to guess that, these cases do get settled. The ones I've handled usually get settled amicably, because there's always issues where you challenge everything from the amount of the fund to the knowledge of the owner, whether the owner was negligent in retaining the captain that put all these lives at risk and eventually, resulted in the loss of life. But, it does happen where the value of the vessel, in cases where the value of the vessel is zero, and you're successful in filing your limitation action, that there is no or little recovery. The most famous case is the Titanic, where you had over 1,500 lives lost, and I believe the limitation fund in that one was $92,000. That was eventually divided amongst the claimants.
Raul Chacon Jr. has been our guest, expert in maritime law. Thank you very much for shedding a little extra light on this. We greatly appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.